que, y cito, un hombre de Illinois pierda su cobertura de seguro en medio de la quimioterapia y muera a causa de ello, o porque otra mujer de Texas quedara sin seguro a punto de sufrir una doble radical de mama, no podría, sin faltar a una ética elemental, impedir a los niños cubanos enfermos de cáncer o del corazón recibir medicamentos y equipos médicos. El bloqueo a Cuba es también, usando palabras del senador Edward Kennedy sobre la reforma de salud, un asunto moral que pone a prueba el carácter de los Estados Unidos de América.
Era el embajador de Cuba, Bruno Rodríguez, durante su comparecencia este miércoles ante la Asamblea General de Naciones Unidas. Por 18º año, la Asamblea General volvió a condenar el embargo que Estados Unidos mantiene por casi medio siglo contra Cuba. Solamente Israel y Palau apoyaron a Estados Unidos. Y así llegamos al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a Más Voces de España, al diario La Jornada de México, a Telesur de Venezuela, a la agencia de noticias Pulsar y a todos los medios comunitarios que hicieron posible este programa. Si desean comunicarse con nosotros, pueden escribirnos a pueblossinfronteras@gmail.com. A nombre de Javier Benítez y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio. Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa. Welcome to Third Paradigm, an out-of-the-box think tank about community sovereignty and regenerative economics. We look at how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. We present a people's history of the Bible and a parent's view on how to raise giving kids in a taking world. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz, WHCL Hamilton College, Radio Lillooet, British Columbia, and Upstart Radio Online.
But unfortunately, it's actually time for Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That show will probably be replayed at another time. That's the Third Paradigm, which is Teresa's show, and it's not sure of its regular show time, but right now we're going into Bathrob Spears Broadsides, so stay tuned.
Catch me a ride on a subway car that's headed for the old North Star and leave my troubles stranded on the mainland. I'm gonna crown the god of night with a light and pull myself clean out of sight and turn the phony world I left to sand. I would gladly sail away and never mind the words you say, they're just the figments of your imagination. Cast your riddles at my head about the way I must be fed upon your rules and schools of institution. Why, Lord, why were the mountains built so high and the shores of the sea sometimes get lonely? Why, Lord, why must I learn to testify when all I wanna be is just a catcher in the rye? It's hard to dream within a scheme that says your soul can't be redeemed. And silent night is heard outside my window. Days are long and ways are short and nights are left with no resort except to listen to the lonesome wind blow. Why, Lord, why were the mountains built so high and the shores of the sea sometimes get lonely? Why, Lord, why must I learn to testify when all I want to be is just a catcher in the rye? If you can't seem to find the aim of the rules set for the game, they'll throw you in a school of restitution. They'll look you in the eye and grin and say, I'd like to be your friend and wear a sign read, long live execution. Mountains built so high and the shores of the sea sometimes get lonely. Why, Lord, why must I learn to testify when all I want to be is just a catcher in the rye?
And welcome to Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. The name of that song is Catcher in the Rye. It's by Sammy Walker. Apparently it's back from June 1975. And let's turn up the mic a little here so you can hear me better, hopefully. It still looks a little quiet here.
Maybe that's the reason. Could that be? Is it the wrong... Well, I'm not sure what the problem is, but... Now we're getting some feedback. How nice. Anyway, I'm Robert Norris, and this is the twice-weekly Bathrop's Piers Broadside Show, which I play a lot of interviews on the street and generally rant on and read a few articles. I'm going to be having some interesting guests on Sunday, for those of you who'd like to join me. We're going to have street-savvy Steve, who will be with me, hopefully. He didn't make it last week. He was apparently firefighting in Southern California. This is a guy who has been hanging around the Sub Rosa Cafe up on Pacific Avenue and keeping an eye on all kinds of internal and external controversies in Santa Cruz, and I'm hoping to tap into his wisdom. That'll be probably maybe as early as 8:30 on Sunday morning if Thomas and I agree that that's a worthwhile topic to be invading his show with as well. Also, there's going to be definitely a special guest on at 8:30 in the morning from the Board of Permit Appeals controversy at the county level. He's going to be talking about the slimy behavior of the Board of Supervisors in essentially rubber stamping the planning department and destroying a kind of the public process there. He's already been on KSCO, which might be reason enough not to have him on my show, but I don't think so, because I think the issue is an important one, even if KSCO also agrees with me on that issue. We've talked about his, this issue before, which he's pretty expert on, and I keep saying he, but not mentioning who he is. because I'm scanning to make sure I pronounce and specify properly what his name is. I've never had him on my show before, I don't think, although I've had a couple of his cohorts. His name is Dan Bronson, and he's going to be talking about... he's got a relatively long analysis of this issue. Longstanding violations of civil rights and the laws and regulations of the state of California and abuse of its citizens by the Planning and Building Department and the current illicit attempt by the Board of Supervisors to remove the properly appointed and serving local appeals board members and prevent their acting to serve the public in a fair and impartial manner through an independent appeals body. In other words, if you're trying to do some building in the county, maybe a second or third unit for some poor people, how's that? Take the most optimistic view of property owners. And then the planning department looks at you and says, no, you've got, first of all, buy an expensive building permit. We're going to send out inspectors. You've got all kinds of problems here. Above and beyond the state habitability codes, then you should be able to appeal that decision. And the appeal process has been essentially aborted by the John Leopold, Neil Coonerty, yes, the great progressive faction of the Board of Supervisors. I would mind some real progressives around here, but on some of these issues, particularly on homeless issues, I see no evidence that any of the people with the labels progressive have anything to do with local human rights concerns and dealing with real poverty issues and so forth, at least around such matters as public accessibility, police control, the community control of the police, restoration of civil rights for poor and homeless people. And we're going to discuss these issues with Dan Bronson at 8:30 on Sunday morning. So join us then. It will be an us, I guess, not just a me. So check it out. And that's going to be here at 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, which is what you're listening to here in Santa Cruz, California. Call-in number here for the next 2 hours, more or less, is going to be 831-427-3772. Uncle Dennis gave me a call earlier noting that Teresa's show, The Third Paradigm, wasn't in fact broadcast earlier today at 11. And I think you can actually go online and you can check out her show there too. So do that if you'd like. You can Google for The Third Paradigm. I think it's Teresa Caraglia. Do I have that name right, Teresa? I hope I'm not mangling your name. I think you sent me an email, so I can... it's Caraggio. I'm sorry, Teresa. And that is going to be... You can check Teresa's website for that. Now, I will try to be actually downloading or uploading or playing her show on Sunday per her request. And I think she had a regular showtime at 2 o'clock. She's no longer, I believe she's still, but on the edge of kind of moving out of the free radio orbit, but we're still playing her show. So there you have it. So I didn't mention that show. That song, Catcher in the Rye, that you heard from Sammy Walker, apparently was inspired by the fact that Phil Oakes' favorite book was Catcher in the Rye. Phil Oakes is a singer from the 60s and 70s. Beautiful, melodic, very pertinent social songs and political attacks on the war criminals in power at that time, as distinguished from the Obama gang that's in power now. But it's the same ilk. It's the same bullshit. It's the same murder. In fact, it's more now than it was then. And I'm sure we'd like to hear some songs about that. I haven't heard too many songs demanding that Obama be taken to justice. Maybe I've just not been listening enough, but if anybody has any ideas on that, wants to email me, rnorris3@hotmail.com, send them to me and I'll play them, because this guy needs to be impeached along with the rest of them, frankly. That's how I feel about it. Anyone who continues and escalates the wars abroad, continues the occupations and the murder, the extreme rendition, the detention hearings, the enemy combatant status under another name, who continues to support court actions around that, which is what the Obama regime is doing, needs to be ousted for sure, fast. So, if anybody's doing any protests at Sam Farr's office, he's our representative who is voting for this latest military madness, which was, I guess, passed or signed, I should say, was it yesterday or the day before, by Führer Obama. Hey, let me know. We've got to go down there and let our representative, ha ha ha, know that he's heartily hated for this action. So, give a call. 831-427-3772. 427-FRSC is the number. Off air, if you want to leave me a message, it's 423-HUFF. 423-4833. Yeah. I'm going to begin again with some, pick up some of the interviews I was doing on Sunday. The show also airs Sunday, as you know, because I just mentioned that. And I never get time to go through them all, but because your phone calls take priority, hey, you get on the air. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Rob. How's it going, man?
Hey there. It sounds like Drum Circle Dave to me.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Well, you know, same old looks like to me, although I'm feeling okay.
So, hey, what's this person, man, that's really getting you down, man? That did something you just said?
You mean our president?
Well, no, I mean, he was in a local hierarchy here. You just mentioned him on the radio.
Gosh.
You were like, is it Mayor Coonerty?
No, I don't think I mentioned Coonerty, although he's not the mayor, but he is on the city council.
There's one guy that's really causing a problem.
Well, the entire city council, of course, and the man who runs the city is the city manager, Dick Wilson.
Oh, that's who it is.
Well,
Mr.
I didn't mention
Wilson.
Him, but I could, you know, and I just have. So what's the word from you, Drummer Dave? Anything? I know you were at the farmer's market yesterday.
Oh yeah,
doing some drumming.
I was having a good time.
I didn't see any problems with the police.
I saw a star celebrity appearance by Sergeant Harms again, a drive-through.
Oh well, you know, Sergeant Harms has the right to drive through along with anyone else.
I mean, he was barreling through.
You know, I noticed that a number of vehicles were just racing through that parking lot. I think what are they trying to do? Sort of, you know, knock a few people aside to let them know that they don't appreciate the drum circle? I don't know what the deal is there.
Yeah, I didn't.
I got pissed. I was going to start shouting at the car and pounding on it and slow
miss
down.
Joe Schultz, you know, serving soup there. You know, I really do.
Yeah, well, you know, Joe usually gets involved when there's political resistance happening, and Drum Circle has gotten pretty mellow. It doesn't really need Joe. You have Ron A.
The donuts are getting old, man.
And the
Come
donuts
on.
Are kind of old, but you got to talk, you know, Food Not Bombs would be nice. I'm not sure.
Does Hot Soup.
Does Food Not Bombs ever show up at the Wednesday Drum Circle? That's, by the way, for those who don't know, this is an event that happens every Wednesday, downtown Santa Cruz, Cathcart and Cedar in parking lot number 4, right next to the farmer's market, and it's a lot of drumming and dancing and socializing, and it's one of the few places where people can actually reclaim the public parking lots as public space, because elsewhere, thanks to Mayor Coonerty, former Mayor Coonerty, actually, and the city council that he is now the trademark for, it's illegal to be in a parking lot unless you are parking a vehicle or retrieving a vehicle. And you can't sit in your car, you can't linger by your car, you can't
read a book,
you can't chat if you don't have a car or bicycle. Even if you do, you're technically illegal unless you're in the process of parking or retrieving your vehicle, and you only have 15 minutes to do it. And, of course, every Wednesday, dozens of people violate
that. I'd
feel
bad if my battery went dead and I couldn't start my car. God, I'd be in a hurt, you know?
You would be technically illegal.
If something went wrong.
But I guess you could leave the parking lot and then walk back in again.
You know, and you could I was in my car.
Well, you could attempt to retrieve your vehicle by futzing.
And if he didn't understand why God was keeping me there.
Well, no. You could attempt to retrieve your vehicle by futzing with the battery. And then when 14 and a half minutes were up, you could walk to the sidewalk, stand there for about 10 seconds, then walk back in and again attempt for another 15 minutes to retrieve your vehicle. It's a great law. It makes a lot of sense.
I'm the guy that just wants to futz with the vehicle and forget about the 15 minutes.
Well,
you know?
Hey.
If I can get out
I say,
of there.
I say futz on. Any other reports? I'm going to roll on you there, Drum Circle Day.
Futz on. Yeah, hey, Rob. No, not really. Hey, you have a great show, and I'm right here listening, man.
All right, and keep reporting if you see anything.
I am. So, hey, you take care.
All right, don't get shot downtown, please.
Oh, no, and not, or stabbed, or, you know,
right.
mutilated somehow.
Or beaten by a police officer, if you can avoid it, okay?
Yeah. Well, no, that's their job, it's peace, right?
Peace, yes, peace. That's what the Fuhrer said, all I want is peace. You know, that's what Hitler once said, I want peace, a little piece of Poland.
But all I'm getting is a piece of Greece. You know, sometimes.
Little piece of Poland, little piece of Czechoslovakia, that sort of thing.
One
of those
real
old
kind
jokes.
Of Greece, like Manteca Greece.
We're going to
wander
on now. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Hey, thanks, Drummer Dave. Boy. So, phone lines are open, and I'll try to sort of segue into these street interviews. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And call in if you'd like. And in the meantime, listen in. I'm picking up a walk around Santa Cruz I was doing. I believe it was either last Saturday or the Saturday before last. I may have the day wrong. And when I was seeking out an event, but I may never get to that because you come first. Hey, you're on Free Radio with Robert. Hello.
Hello, Robert. John, it's joking.
Hey, John. What's happening?
I just had a couple of comments about Obama.
Oh, okay.
I just heard that, I guess it was on Channel 32, which runs Russia Today, and also DWTV, they were talking about the fact that Obama has shut down some of the CIA-run prisons in, like, Poland and some other places. The CIA is no longer in the business of running those prisons. But on the other hand, he's also increased the amount of drone attacks in Pakistan.
He also is continuing the rendition program, which essentially the CIA doesn't do the torturing. It just takes people to the countries where others do the torturing.
Oh, okay.
I think, if I understand it correctly, he has, you know, in other words, he's sort of allowed them to wash their hands by moving into the next room rather than, you know, doing it themselves. Removing the hands-on approach, you know. Of course, nobody who's done any of this torture is being punished, and so, you know, it's absurd in terms of, you know, any kind of real incentive to stop this whole process. But I'm sorry. Go ahead. So, what else? Anything more about our great leader you wish to tell me?
No, not really. That was all I had to offer.
Yeah. Well, anything happening in San Jose? I know that's your beat. Usually, that's where you're calling from, right?
No, we always have our Monday vigil to support the Palestinians at Cesar Chavez Park, San Carlos, whatever street that is.
Is Food Now Bomb still active over in San Jose? I know they were serving in St. James Park for a while there.
I haven't seen any Food Now Bombs around here, although I don't get out that much.
I know also CHAM, the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry downtown, was involved in a lot of these actions to, you know, secure housing for the homeless and restore rights. And also there was a meeting in Sacramento of homeless activists, and I guess Sandy Perry of CHAM from San Jose attended. But I expect you to go in there.
I was looking at some of the websites concerning homeless shelters in San Jose.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's a semi-decent program over in West San Jose, like Campbell and Los Gatos and those places. But I'm pretty sure they go by zip code of where your last address was. So if you're downtown, you're probably out of luck. You just have to go for whatever.
Well, if you want to do any research, if you want to research anything around CHAM, and, you know, the Scott Wagers was the pastor there who was originally quite an activist 20 years ago, but, you know, a lot can happen in 20 years. But, you know, if you hear anything about what's cooking around San Jose, which is the second largest city in the state, you know, so it's quite a, you know, it's a huge place. I know there's been a lot of controversy about the beating and tasering of a Vietnamese-American student. That's been in the papers, and it's because it got on video, and that's an interesting story.
Yeah, there's been a couple of cases like that.
So, you know, that's interesting. In Santa Cruz, we have reports of police beating people up. But we don't have video of it, which is, you know, unfortunate. Of course, people they beat up, at least the people who reported it.
Low-tech Santa Cruz, they got to get their cell phone cameras.
Well, alcoholic and, you know, drunk Santa Cruzans as well, who aren't, you know, in the best position to
do that. Plus, very poor people, as you said, low tech.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, John. Anything else?
No, I should cover it.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in.
All right, man.
Bye bye. 427-3772 is still the number. 427-3772 is still the number here in Santa Cruz. 831 is the area code, in case you're calling from Cincinnati or Moscow or somewhere in Germany, where I sometimes actually get calls from. Hello, Germany. So that's a possibility. Let's jump to the street interviews, though, before I get entangled in some other questionable call here.
And indeed, it looks like I may be approaching my destination here on the far side of the Santa Cruz Library, kitty corner from City Hall, and I guess across from the women's clinic. I hear the sounds of music, and I guess this is Locust Street. Hey, a couple of porta potties have been set up, although that may be involved with the construction that's going on. It looks like a orange mesh is meshing off the street. It's not clear what what's happening. There's some dancing going on. Not a lot of people. Sounds like amplified music. And it says exit only, which apparently means that I'll be blocked if I try to go through here. Well, Arch, appears to be a sound truck, woman with a baby, a monitor. Hi, what's happening here?
Emergency decompression party.
And how's it going?
Fantastic. Are you joining us today?
What is it involved in joining us?
Go around the other way, pay to get in, and come dance.
It's a little warm for me to be dancing, but I like your child's face paint.
Thanks. Well, we go till 10 o'clock, so it'll cool off.
Fair enough. And who is sponsoring this?
It's the Burning Man sanctioned event. It's a group of people who live around here who are burners.
And is this annual, or is this your first one?
This is our first one, so as of next year, it'll be annual.
How much did it cost you to actually get a permit and pay for all this shit?
I'm not really sure.
Does it require police protection and all this nonsense?
Probably. All that nonsense.
And your name is?
Alicia.
Robert Alicia.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Good luck with the party. I will probably be going to the library. How much does it cost to get in?
$10 if you're in playa gear, and $15 if not, in streetwear.
So it looks like you haven't had a lot of people coming in.
It just started.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Well, I'm the guy who dismisses Burning Man as some kind of a yuppie extravaganza, but what do I know? Well, probably as much as the next person. Library, at least, is free. When it's open, that is. So I'm down here, half in the shade, half in the sun, across from the Cinema 9, in front of O'Neill's, talking with
Boris Zamboni.
Also known as Boots on the Blacktop Brad, as I insist on calling. You have your police help with a buck, extra change, or some food. Now, in the past, you've sat here a lot on the sidewalk.
Talking a little rapidly here on the tape, Brad is a panhandler that often sits on the sidewalk across from the Cinema 9 in front of the O'Neill's.
One of the few exempt zones, in fact, one of two exempt zones in Santa Cruz. But you've also been known to, have you hung out on the benches near Next Space or thereabout?
Oh, I stop there for a cigarette every now and then. Like early in the morning, I might wander over with my coffee and lean against the wall or sit on a bench for a while. Yeah, I've been known to.
And Next Space is an office that has, it's an organization that has an office on the second floor of Cooper Street across from O'Neill Surf Shop. It's famous for, I guess, Ryan Coonerty he was a former mayor and a bookshop owner in Bookshop Santa Cruz, right. And he's also been the subject of his organization, and specifically a man named Jeremy, has been the...
That's Jeremy Nooner, who's the CEO of Next Space that we're talking about. We've talked about him on the show before for ranting at particularly Brian Parquette, a sometime homeless person, sometime activist, who he has denounced as a faggot drug dealer loudly in public and has called the police on for sitting on a bench for more than an hour and Brian recently paid a citation for $293 for sitting on the bench for more than an hour, something he didn't want to challenge because he felt intimidated by Mr. Nooner. And here is Brad giving his account of Mr. Nooner's his experiences with Jeremy. It should be said these experiences happened back in August, and reportedly Jeremy had sort of cooled off to ranting at Brian, demanding he leave, calling the police, and so forth. Although I heard last week that happened again, and we were going to release a video of this, but Brian was nervous that he would be further harassed by Jeremy. So we'll see what we're going to do about that, but I'm certainly interested in encouraging the community not to tolerate this kind of bigotry and to expose this kind of stuff when well-to-do individuals who are the CEO of companies, and that's what Jeremy Nooner is, declare it open season on poor people downtown because they don't like the look of homeless people cluttering up the public sidewalks near their business.
Yeah, subject of numerous complaints from a man named Brian Parkett. Do you remember this?
Yeah. I was actually a witness to an earlier event than the one in which Mr. Parkett is detailing these nominal, whatever you call, difficulties with Mr. Jeremy.
I know Jeremy is actually on tape called Jeremy a faggot drug dealer. And
he's called Brian a faggot drug dealer, not Jeremy. He wouldn't want to so characterize himself, I don't think.
And also called the police on him for sitting on a bench for more, Jeremy says for more than an hour, Brian says for 15 minutes to half an hour, something to that effect. But you said you witnessed a certain incident?
Yeah, one day, I believe Brian was leaning against the Pacific Wave window, and I was on the bench, just about to walk up to the bench to smoke a cigarette. I was walking with little Gary, the little Burt Reynolds-y, Charlie Manson-looking guy. Gary, I don't know his last name. We were walking there, and a cop came by on a bike who happened to know Gary from the parks when he's dealt with Gary. So Gary went to talk to him. The officer stopped, and Gary went over to talk to him. Jeremy came out. Oh, thank you, brother. Yeah, that'll work. Nice. Jeremy came out to do what he was doing, walk across the street to do some business, and as he saw the cop talking to an obvious homeless person, Gary, he said, "Oh, thank you, officer, for doing your job," in which case I lift my eyebrows and go, "That's unusual," and Brian was right there, and maybe one other person. So a minute later or two, Jeremy was done with his business over here, and he walked back, and we were all still in the same positions, and he said, "These homeless people are such trouble over here," and I went, "What?" And it turned out the cop wasn't talking to him, giving him a ticket. They were old friends, and they were seeing, "How you doing, Gary? How's life? You've been in sober lately?" And so on. And Gary was sober, in fact. And then the guy just started railing. I sat down on the bench, and he started saying, "There's cigarettes. They come inside our door, officer. They, I want all these kids out here. I want these homeless people off the street. The cigarettes are bad for us. They come in our business, and they make everybody sick. And these kids are here all the time causing trouble, blah, blah, blah. Drugs, they're murderers, they're killers." He was starting to have a nervous breakdown. And then I sat down on the bench, and he was visibly nervous because an officer, I forget what his name was, wasn't exactly, filling his expectations of what he would wish for, right? So he said, "You!" And he looked at me, "You get off this... Hey, dude, what do I have to do with it?" I almost got in his face. I said, "Please, don't give me any flack." And he goes, "You've got 59 more minutes." And I go, "Yeah, well, you got a lot of nerve yourself, you dumbass." And I was pretty mad at him because I had just sat down and we were all being rattled by him. And then the next thing I know, I sat there for 3 or 4 minutes because I didn't want to make a quick exit. And I watched as he was talking to the cop, actually laying his blues on him, crocodile tears and so on. And I know the cop's got to do psychological work for a while. This is going to be cool. And so I sat for a few minutes and listened to him, and Jeremy was boiling over. He was almost screaming at us, having a nervous breakdown, and finally I got up and walked away while they were still, in ad hoc committee, and it was terrible. I could see right away that the guy's got a screw loose and that he flies off the handle, and that sooner or later his version of what it takes to make money is going to bleed over into what he believes runs the world, and in case he wants to be a part of that, he's inherited because he has money and a job, and he thinks the computers are God or something, and so he's probably thought he was a master programmer or something, and I figured this guy's crazy.
He is the master programmer.
It was kind of fun to watch it. And then within like a week, this is either late July or early August, within a week I took off down to Orange County. I had some things to do, I had to get glasses, get my dental work done. I took a 6-week vacation. And when I came back, I heard what happened with Parkett.
And Al reports what had to do with he was harassed several times.
We're talking about Brian Parkett. That's Brian's last name. And Brian actually has video of Jeremy threatening him. And we have audio of Jeremy's ranting at him being a faggot drug dealer. And apparently this kind of attack has happened at least three or four times. And Jeremy, as I said, is the CEO of the Next Space, which is a business closely associated with Ryan Coonerty on the second floor of the corner area of Cooper and Pacific.
By Jeremy, according to Brian's account, and according to a video that Brian took of it, and then we in Huff wanted to document what went down, so we kind of witnessed what happened, and we heard this Jeremy come out and essentially denounce Brian as a faggot
drug dealer. Yeah. You know what? Jeremy should look at his own pink underpants. He looks more like a faggot than Brian does. And that's one. Number two, you can see that he's spiraling out of control and that he's got a control freak thing and it's not going his way. You know, people don't want to bow down and worship his modem and don't want to get booted up for him. And so Jeremy's going to have a nervous breakdown and they should get him out of there. They should get that whole computer network out of there. And O'Coonerty should be accountable to us, tell us what they're doing to make money, how it affects the rest of us, what we're getting shut on and the food's crappy and all this and that and everything else. Everything that we can't handle except we can handle the weather. It'd be nice if those guys were accountable to us and we knew what the fuck they're doing in there. Like, it reminds me that Ryan wants to take over the world or something, or maybe he wants to sponsor a bunch of guys making, you know, like thousands of dollars while the rest of us sit in poverty. Apparently there's a niche up there where work is available if you're towards white collar, and I don't see those guys as being apt to, you know, automatic fill-in for it. Maybe they should bust that cloud up and drop some of the regular jobs for us, you know, like more dishwashing jobs, more landscape jobs, more janitor jobs, more delivery jobs, more factory jobs, more department store jobs.
You're trying to lower the quality of Santa Cruz. I can see that right now. Here you are sitting on the street munching celery and carrots with your please help with a buck sign. Now, sir, don't you understand? Santa Cruz needs a different and a higher type of individual downtown.
We've always been higher. And we've always been different. The fact that we're down on our knees or whatever doesn't necessarily mean that we're unqualified to stand up and take a broader stand on things. I'm debating whether to wait for the whole thing to blow over, to blow up, to blow away, or to blow down or whatever before I get up and do something with myself, you know. So I'm kind of like an impious observer of it all anyway.
And impious dog.
This guy over there is a screw loose and a hothead besides which. He didn't slow down from that day. He just kept going. And I bet the thing boiled over a couple of weeks later, and it became a Absalom, a fiasco. And it just shows what a man who's driven by power, who thinks he's all of a sudden the next, you know, president of Santa Cruz can do when he starts to realize that he's really incompetent and ignorant. I'm ashamed of Jeremy, tell you the truth. I also think he's a little scared of me, or all of us, because I sat on the bench a few times for 10 minutes, half hour waiting for somebody to come out. When they did, I think once or twice he looked by, and he looked nervous like a skittish rabbit and went about his work, you know, and he didn't say anything to me.
This was after our sting operation where we documented his language?
Yeah, this is after I returned from down south, which was like in the late September or so. I'd been filled in with what happened to Brian. It gave me quite a laugh, and so I kind of like was wary of it, and I haven't had any problems with him at all. Just one or two times when he's come by from all the people in there, and he's been tamed a little bit by all of this. And I think now he's a little bit scared to throw his personality out as much as it is. And he's also probably regaling over the smoking ban. I'm sure he's really excited that that's going to go into effect, because now he's got something you know, a placebo pill he can take every day that makes him feel better again. Maybe he'll still try to take us all over. I don't know.
Now, I see you yourself are munching carrots and celery. Does this mean you've abandoned your tobacco habits?
No. Unfortunately not. I wish I could quit, but I haven't been able to. I'll worry about that later also.
I guess you will.
You're darn right, I will, with a cane and a crutch and a drink in my hand and smoking my cigarettes till the heaven comes and takes me and puts that shit on me.
An artificial lung, of course. Uh-oh. We've been talking with, again, you call yourself?
Boris Zamboni.
And we insist your name is Boots on the Blacktop Brad. Nope. Well, there's a difference of opinion, but still.
Hey, it's all good. I mean, tomorrow is another day, and, you know, tomorrow I might have to face reality and the fact that I'm still here on the sidewalk, and now I have boots on the blacktop, and I'm still who I am.
No hassles from the police?
Very few.
Very good.
I got one the other day.
For what?
I think it was a mistaken identity. I mean, the cop Harms or somebody came by, and he was doing all kinds of stuff, and he stopped once and said, we've been getting a complaint few minutes ago about somebody spilling douche powder all over the mall, and I go, no, I have no idea what that's all about. Very strange.
So he simply asked you a question. He didn't give you a citation or a warning or move you along?
No, I think he's okay with me for a while. I think if I'm going to do anything bloodthirsty, it'll be behind their back, so they won't ever suspect me of it. They won't even ever notice that anything like that goes on, and they would look at me like, well, you're still doing good, Brad. Good for you. You know what the reason I think is, Robert? I think they're tired of... I think they're tired of like pushing their luck with people, and I'm a person that can't take any more. You know, I'm not really obsessed with it, but they've been really oppressive, and it's about time for them to turn their backs on me and go deal with more important things. And you know what? White collars where they should be doing their work. They should be given a lot of. They should be going to the white collar places like this building, and just waiting for parking violations on end. You know, they should be starting to look at those guys, saying the poor people are helpless. They don't want to go to jail. There's a lot they can't do. There's a lot of ignorance and a lot of lack of conscience towards things. But those people are a real thorn in my side. And I think if you're going to run a business, you got to have an open heart to everybody in the community. You got an open heart to black people, Mexican people, poor people, drug people, you know, foreign people, whatever.
Even panhandlers and celery munchers?
Well, you can ignore me. I mean, you're not going to give me any money, and I'm going to say hello. And if you don't go off quiet off them, what? You get a job, blah, blah, blah. And I go, man, because I broke six of my bones in my leg last week, and I'm waiting on disability, and I can't do anything. I'm crippled.
Is that you, in fact? Are you describing your own situation?
No, but I read that in the paper, and it does sound awful.
There you go. Another tale of terror, a false tale of terror from one of our most notorious panhandlers. Downtown. I will be contacting Sergeant Harm shortly.
BZ here, signing off. Nice talking with you all.
Thanks, Brad. Meanwhile, up the street, a little guitar playing. Steel string guitar. All right, we're in front of the El Palomar, and it's about 2 o'clock. We're talking with
Glenn Merrifield.
And Glenn, you say that you had there was a false arrest the other day?
Yes, sir.
What happened?
I was at Capitola Beach, and I went into the bathroom to wash my face and wash my headband and readjust my headband and cool off a little bit. And police swooped on me.
Capitola police?
Yes. And they said that I had needles on me that I was fixing in the bathroom. When it came down to searching me, they found no needles, no dope, and nothing. Still arrested me.
For?
Public intox. And
were you drinking?
No.
Okay.
I hadn't had a drink since 7 o'clock in the morning.
And what time was this arrest?
About 4.
In the afternoon?
Yes. And then...
And where was this again?
It was at Capitola Beach.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And the officers told me that, I heard them discussing things. Oh, the informant lied about an innocent person, me. Mm-hmm. And so they're getting put in a sandwich or cross up about it all.
But you were still taken to the jail?
Yes.
And held for how long?
I was held for 48 hours.
So did anyone come to identify you at the arrest site? Did an informant come up and say, yes, that person is...
No. I saw them go by, though, which I figured was the informant, because they kept staring.
And how many police officers are involved?
Two. One Mexican, one white corporal with blonde hair and a Mexican kind of a heavy set.
All charges dropped?
All charges are dropped, but they put a parole violation on top of it, so they COP'd me on my parole and dropped all charges.
COP means?
Released back to custody and then right back to the streets and programming again.
And what was the parole violation?
Because they said that I had needles and that I was possessing a shooting up in the bathroom. And then I was public in talks, which they found no booze, no needles, and no dope.
So did you demand a hearing to substantiate those charges?
No, I wrote the grand jury. I wrote a complaint to the grand jury and to the internal affairs of the judges and DAs.
Did you CC your parole officer?
The officers and informants lied to my parole officer, stating the same thing. Oh, he's shooting up in the bathroom. There's needles. He's got dope on him. But when it came down to the full search of all my property and my body and everything I contained, there was no dope, no needles, and no booze.
You're on parole for?
I'm on parole for a light charge of my drummer let me use his car with permission, and I got ran off the road by a big rig and hit the guardrail going 40.
And what was the crime you're accused of?
He didn't have no insurance, theft insurance, so that's why he lied to the police so he could get paid the $7,000 that I owe him still. I already paid him $1,000. I owe him $6,000 still restitution.
Now, let me understand this. What did he lie to the police? In what respect did he lie to the police?
Because he stated in black and white in the arrest report to his own parole agent, which is a deputy of the state, that he gave me permission to use the car, gave me the keys, told me to be right back. Obviously, I wasn't going to be right back because I got in the accident.
He accused you of theft?
Yes.
Were you convicted of theft?
No, I was convicted of the most lessest charge possible.
And you pled to it?
Yeah.
In order, why did you plead to it?
Oh, because they were like coming at me with, we got you dead bang. If you go to jury trial, you're going to get more years.
What jurisdiction was this?
It's Santa Barbara, California.
Well, here you're in Santa Cruz. We would never do such a thing here.
No.
We've been talking with?
Glenn Edward Merrittville.
Thank you.
Yes.
And on the corner of Soquel and Pacific, a man with a guitar and a cap. So we're talking with the ne'er-do-well Christopher D. here, and it's actually dusk, about 6:20 downtown on Pacific Avenue on Saturday evening, walking down past a Cathcart in Pacific. Chris, what's the word on that? You say a crackdown around Burning Man?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just guessing. I get into town, you know, from the mountains, and I'm hearing tons of stories within 5 minutes after I'm down here on Pacific Avenue. One brother, who shall remain nameless, by his own request, had two tickets within the last 24 hours. He's a walkabout. He doesn't actually sit and panhandle. He walks about, so it's kind of difficult to catch him with a ticket. But actually, somebody actually made a complaint against him that he got within 3 feet of this person, and he was ticketed, and then he was ticketed a second time for spare changing within 14 feet of a building, even though he was mobile and walking at the time, not sitting anywhere. But anyway, so, and
we're not talking about rags, are we?
No, and he spoke of also that they'd been trolling the river bottom at dawn and raiding the encampments. This is unusual, even though they can do it and they have done it. They don't do it all the time, and it's usually indicative of some sort of a crackdown. I guess Burning Man only because it's a very large festival that brings a lot of indigent travelers and whatnot into town. So my guess is that Burning Man is the purpose or the object of the current crackdown, is to try to sort of keep things under control down here on the avenue during the festivities and whatnot.
So, you know, I went by the...
So much sights and sounds going on. It's pretty absorbing.
Yeah, we're walking by the Del Mar. There's a line of people standing waiting to buy tickets or possibly to go buy coffee at the Del Marette. It looks like a long line for tickets. Panhandler's delight.
There's a lot of people down here today. Come on down and bag some money, guys.
I hope
it's a free-for-all. They can't possibly bust us all in a situation like this.
And, of course, I notice it's after dusk, but they still haven't closed the enclosed area between the two kiosks here.
Yeah, I know. What's that all about? See, they become very overwhelmed, Robert, during situations like this. And what happens is it makes for a funny situation because their crackdowns are very unevenly matched to the situation. In other words, during a situation like this, they're completely overwhelmed. So what they'll do is tomorrow morning, as I've told you during some of our Sunday shows, tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, they'll be out in force cracking down on all the stragglers, everybody who's left out in the open once all the party ceases. And they do so almost with a personal vengeance, almost like they're really pissed at us because we took the city back, we took the streets back for a few hours, for a day or two. And then I lost my train of thought. What happens is you know, we take the city back for a day or two or for a few hours, and they become very vengeful afterwards. So even though I'm sure it's planned and it's part of the routine that they come out tomorrow and bust us all, they'll do it with an extra zeal that you see, I think, is generated from the anger that they get over a situation like this, where they can have no control over this.
I did go by the Burning Man. There was a Burning Man block festival.
Right.
Where they were charging $10 to get in, supposedly to go to a charity. And, you know, the whole block was taped off, and you couldn't get in. Didn't look like they were getting much in the way of...
apparently, we saw people doing. That down at Taco Bell alone, 50 people in town.
This was over at Locust Street behind the library. But Burning Man's always impressed me as a kind of a yuppie shindig.
But it brings a lot of indigent travelers. I mean, there was a huge crew of them just
how
now up at Taco Bell.
When it costs so much money to go to Burning Man?
How can you be indigent when you travel with the Grateful Dead? You know, the same difference. I mean, for years, you know, part of the problem supposedly here in Santa Cruz, especially during the 80s when me and you knew each other when we were young, was the Dead. They always blamed this crap. This whole situation was our fault. I'm going here at Starbucks.
Turn out.
And you know, so, you know, for endless years, that was blamed on us because, you know, we were travelers. We were indigent. We kept coming through town at periods based on when the tours were out and when they were in. And you must remember when they banned, you couldn't dress like a deadhead up at the St. Francis Mission, right? Yeah, you know, and stuff like that. And so there was, you know,
if you have more to say, you have to come to the studio tomorrow because I'm on my way.
All right. I'll be there. I'll be on the air tomorrow.
So he says. Thank you, Christopher.
And indeed, Curb Hugger Chris did show up at the studio, and he was co-host on that show, and that was not last Sunday, but I think the Sunday before last. And then he also showed up last Sunday as well. So we may see him again this coming Sunday as a co-host, or perhaps not. He has to kind of prepare for the winter. He lives outside. He's poor. He's homeless. And he's also an activist. And doing all those things at the same time is a real difficult job.
Well, it's about 9:15 here on the avenue. And Freda Borders with me is a man of few words, but sometimes a lot of music. Meriwether Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Santa Cruz. Welcome to another artistic, fun-filled evening. Glad to see Robert out mixing it up, keeping us
informed.
Yeah. Yeah, current on the current events.
Now, you mentioned that you have been checking out the Monday Calvary Episcopal Church Coffee House.
Right, yeah, one of the many places to connect with the Rainbow family. Just like you can downtown, well, there's a sort of a focus outreach there every Monday, 5 to 7, so be sure and check it out.
How's it going? I understand there's been a lot of clearing of the lawns, people not allowed to be there during the rest of the week. Is that still the case, or has that changed?
Well, there's some ups and downs going on, you know, various players and people using and abusing. So, you know, love rules and stay tuned, you know. We'll see more.
Santa Cruz Mayor Matthews rules, or perhaps Father Joel, under the thumb of his board of directors rules, right?
Well, they call it the vestry. It's a nice little spin on board of directors. V-E-S-T-R-Y. So you got to connect with the vestry to find out the haps.
The festering vestry, eh?
Yeah, I was looking for something like that.
Well, thank you, Mike. Anything you want to add?
No, just good to see you and know that all is well. And we got this musician out here giving us the backup sound. We're happy to see him keep up the classics on the corner here at Borders.
Indeed. Thank you, Mike.
And that's Meriwether Mike, who has been with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, a sometime musical group which sometime takes back public space, actually fairly regularly. I think Vision Song, Valerie, Meriwether Mike play usually once a week, and sometimes others join them. Used to be every Wednesday night in front of the New Leaf Market. Now, actually, their work has actually encouraged Suzanne, the drummer, and others to do even more musical activity and social activity downtown late at night, which I think actually is a protective device. What I was talking about, though, with Meriwether Mike, in which he was, I think, is usually much more optimistic than I am about it, and it's good that there's some people who are more optimistic than I am. Otherwise, we would all probably be shooting ourselves, or have already shot ourselves. The Calvary Episcopal Church under Father Joel, as I've talked about with Ron A., who was the groundskeeper there for quite a while and organized the youth program, and now is sort of split with the church and has been, as usually to be found on Sundays in front of the Sunday afternoons in front of the Borders on Pacific Avenue on Wednesdays and at the drum circle and giving out donuts and burritos and sometimes clothes and different kinds of necessary toiletries. It was a real crackdown on homeless people there and young people there that she was trying to minister to and provide a kind of a safe environment for and a nurturing environment for, based upon the harassment and hassles by nearby property owners like Mayor Cynthia Matthews. And I don't know that I have not heard directly that Cynthia Matthews specifically told the police to clear the lawns or pressured the parishioners to crack down on Father Joel, to crack down on Rene, to crack down on the right of people to just sit on the grass if they're not doing anything else that's harmful. But I know that that seems to be the general scuttlebutt. So, you know, you can take it as you wish. And we've heard Rene talk about these issues on this matter before. You can always go to back Bathrop Spears broadside shows if you'd like. They are archived at www.huffsantacruz, HUFFSantaCruz.org. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a staggering along organization which continues to meet weekly at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific, 10:30 to 12:30 on Wednesday mornings. So check it out. If you want to catch that organization, volunteer to help. We're concerned with civil rights violations for poor people and documenting abuses of discrimination and actually hoping to end them and getting together, supporting such things as tent cities by the homeless and so forth. Give a call to the Huff line, the Huff phone line, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and you can also get on the Huff email list, and you can get all kinds of cranky emails from me and others about the progress or lack of progress of these kinds of struggles for poor people in this city and others.
We're talking to two who are facing, should we say, you're saying greed on the streets?
Yes, yes. There are people out here act like that they are better than everybody else because at this point in time they have homes and have money.
And your name is?
My name is Tim Clark.
And who is this associated with you?
This is Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth. How are you?
Fine.
And how long have you two been out here?
Well, I've been off and on in Santa Cruz on these streets for about 8 years, off and on.
And do you notice any change in the last 8 years?
No. Other than more new stores coming in and things like that, as far as the way that people get treated on the streets, it just seems to get worse, actually.
And I know that you were talking about wanting to sell Street Spirit.
Yes,
homeless paper.
I have sold Street Spirit for you before, so.
You know, if you come to a Huff meeting, you can. Huff meets usually every Wednesday at 10:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. You know where the Sub Rosa is? It's about three or four blocks up the street. It's 703 Pacific. It's about a block up from the Saturn, if you know the Saturn. Or Taco Bell, if you know Taco Bell.
Yeah. Okay.
You're outdoors?
Yes, at the moment, yes.
Any hassles for sleeping?
No, actually, I've been pretty good at that.
Are you well hidden, or are you just being on good terms with the chief of police?
Neither of the above, actually. I just, private property I'm on right now, and the people have given permission to be there, so.
Well, that's cool. Okay.
So at least we got some people out here that care.
All right, well, I care enough at least to talk to you, give you anything. I got some candy if you're hungry.
Yes, yes, I would love some.
All right, I will rot your teeth. Hang on.
Yeah, that may actually be the end of this particular tape, but have no fear. I have tapes galore.
Whoops. Sunday night, October 18th, 2009, down in front of New Leaf Market And I noticed that for once there's no chains that have been put up in the fenced-off area between the two kiosks in front of New Leaf. And we have, of course, the usual musicians are out here at night. We have Les and an associate playing in front of Alfrescos. And, of course, the notorious and much beloved Suzanne. Suzanne, any reports from the street?
Been out here so long.
Stopping my conversation.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I'm moving. I'm butting in, man. I want to find out what's going on.
She hasn't been here.
Yeah.
And who are you, madam? You want to identify yourself?
I was here out last night playing music.
Because I'm confused.
Excuse me, you're getting into the street.
Would you like to announce yourself? Please state your name. Your business, please.
I was looking forward
it's
to a personal
pretty exciting
so
radio
have
here
do
down
that.
At...
But he didn't have those talk.
Oh, yeah, you can talk to him without it.
So there's a kind of usual pleasant scene out here. Folks are kind of hanging out, listening to some late-night music. Informally gathered, I'd say. We're talking 10, 15 people. And not a wildly alcoholic scene, which is a pleasant change.
Who are you talking shit over here?
Suzanne, anything you wish to tell us that might, you know, excite us, aggravate us?
It's really, really cold and really hard out here, and if you can do anything at all, it'd be to buy someone a blanket.
Yeah.
Anyone, yes, blankets, sweaters,
blanket.
How about
anything warm, socks. People
rain.
Need that. When it starts raining, all people
right,
usually
yeah.
end up losing their stuff, or somebody steals their stuff because their stuff gets all wet, and they're desperate, so they go steal somebody else's stuff, and then people end up getting cold, and it's dangerous out here, especially with the swine flu going around. Thank God it hasn't hit the homeless people, huh?
Yeah.
Thank God, thank God.
Thanks, Suzanne.
So
I understand the church, Pastor Adams' meal has moved to the homeless service center.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, they used to do both. They used to do the church and, at the tower. But they said, I'm not sure what the story is. You should find out more about that because we really would like them back at the clock tower. But I guess the cops said something or other and they were shut down.
Scared them away.
Yeah.
And she's talking about Pastor Dennis Adams, who's a Sunday regular weekly feeder of homeless people. It used to be at noon at the town clock, but they were driven away and they are now serving out at the homeless service center, kind of pretty far out from the center of town at Highway 1 and Highway 9. As you can hear, that doesn't meet the needs of everybody, and they would have preferred a more central location, but the police and the merchants apparently and the mayor say no.
They're taking all the free meals for the people away, and if you notice, there's a lot more people getting, you know, in trouble for stealing from the stores, and it's because people are trying to survive out here with, you know, no help and no resources. They're shutting them down, and it's really sad, you know. I hope they don't kill and, like, harm a whole bunch of people this year. Hope we can all stay warm and stay fed.
That's the word from the drummer extraordinaire, Suzanne.
Much love. Everyone must show love, have love, be enlightened to love. Love is warm, right?
Thank you, Suzanne. And here's a man on a guitar in front of Borders doing some late-night strumming. Well, why don't you sign in, guitarist? What's your name again?
Ricardo Lopez.
And how's the business? You were playing, I guess, last night as well.
You know, Santa Cruz loves music. It could be better, but Santa Cruz loves music. And you got to love Santa Cruz.
Any hassles from the public guardians with the guns?
Of course, yeah, of course. They come up and do a show of force and try to intimidate people. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
And try and intimidate people just sitting up when people are just singing and playing and sitting over them, standing over them, or parking right beside them. You know, I was trying to say, gosh, people come from as far as Vallejo and King City just to hear the street musicians and see the lively street life that goes on Pacific Avenue. There are three great streets in the Bay Area, Haight Street, Telegraph Avenue, and Pacific Avenue. Pacific is probably the most beautiful, the safest, the most fun, and they're acting like, you know, and rather than harassing homeless people, they should be spending that money that they're using to go catch the person the people that stabbed that boy last night. I think they've got better things to do than be harassing us. They can go solve a real.
Have you had any problems tonight or today with police?
Just today, yeah, we had them parked right over the kids. They didn't bother me, but they parked over the kids who were singing because they attracted a crowd of people who were actually watching and enjoying it. And it was, they parked right on top of him, stood over him and watched him, like staring him down, like intimidation type.
How many police were involved?
Two of them, one in a car and one who was just
walking. Did you notice the names of the police officers?
No, I sure didn't.
And did that deter the singers or did they continue?
No, they were intimidated, though. They kept singing, you know, and then as soon as they left, after like 10 minutes, they stood here. And then they left and they said, what was that all about?
And yeah, so the kids, even though intimidated, stood up to the police.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, they stood up for their constitutional rights. They're just singing. The people were enjoying them. You know, there were probably the fact that a lot of Santa Cruz people and people who were shopping and spending money were standing around them and giving them tips. Kind of made the cops go away.
As you're standing within 50 feet of a change-making machine here, have you been hassled by police in front of borders for doing that? Actually, it's legal for you to do it with a guitar in an open guitar case. That's my understanding. You cannot, however, sit down on the sidewalk, nor can you panhandle. So watch your step.
No, I saw him give a kid a ticket for panhandling this morning.
What happened? Tell me about that.
I was just sitting in the cafe having a cup of coffee up
there.
Noah's Bagels. And I watched this kid, didn't look like he was doing anything. And the cop stops with flashing lights, whirring lights, you know, and stops this kid and gives him a real hard time. And he was just fair changing to get a cup of coffee. I ask him what happened later. And the funny thing is that the headlines were right there in front of us on the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and they were on the box, and it says, 16-year-old boy stabbed to death downtown. And I'm like looking at the headlines down below me and looking at the headlines over there, and I'm like, and they're spending money on this, giving this guy a ticket that he can't pay, that he's just going to have to go to jail. They're going to have to feed him for a day. I'm like, dude, I'm really glad Santa Cruz has got so much money to spend on harassing homeless people.
They're helping the homeless by putting them in suitable lodging and protecting them from themselves.
I wonder what it cost to run that big machine that takes the pictures of people and then to run their fingerprints. There's like at least three deputies right there. And they're, what do they get, $20 an hour? I wonder how much those machines cost to take this poor vagrant who's begging to get a cup of coffee in.
A quick photo of you.
Sure.
Well, now we have you on tape. You're history, man.
Thank you very much, Robert. I always love your show. You know I do.
We've been talking with
Ricardo Lopez. And I want to do a report about my bike trip down south and back. The homeless situations that I saw, even San Diego, the Nazi cop capital of California, has legal sleeping now from 9 p.m. to 6:30 in the morning, and everyone's sleeping on the riverbank. And they're sleeping on the post office. Most of
people. And how long ago were you down there?
I took off from Santa Cruz on the 24th on my bicycle.
September?
September the 24th, yes. And I got back on October the, let me see, it took me 12th. October the 12th. And I saw some amazing things. People sleeping in places you would never imagine, all the way down on the highway and back. I even ran into people, an old woman pushing her, pulling a little cart outside of, I'm going to say she was maybe, she was between Santa Cruz and Malibu walking on the highway. And I ran into another guy, and the highway patrolman stopped him, and he was pushing a shopping cart, and he was 15 miles from Lompoc, which is on one up in the mountains, and I'm going to say 20 miles from Guadalupe, maybe 25 from Pismo, pushing a shopping cart out there, and the guy looked beat. I saw all kinds of stuff like that. It was amazing. And they're saying the recession's over? I don't know.
Thank you.
And thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Ricardo.
And let's take a brief break here. And let's try to avoid echoes in the studio. And here's a little music for us to muse by. is supposed to be music, anyway.
Early rising strikes the dawn as
so it looks like a blank CD for some reason, but...
from the mind that flows in.
Nope, that's... going to have to wait on that one. Well, here's something we can consider.
Going over here and just have a nice day.
Ready?
Yes, sir, I guess so. You know, we're ready as we're ever going to be.
All right.
That's strange. I'm not getting any signal going.
Well, this is the shortest song on earth. But then
see what the problem
I may
is.
Have bit you a liar. Don't believe a thing I say. Don't trust what I do. Cause I may have bit you a liar.
Looks like actually I have a signal going out, but maybe my radio isn't working. I'm not sure what the problem is. Anybody actually is hearing this show, either on the air or... anybody's actually hearing this musical number, please give me a call at 427-3772 so I know that we're actually going out, because I can't hear it, and I do see something happening on the monitor, but it's peculiar. Here's a caller. Hi there, caller. You're on free radio, and I'm hoping I can hear you.
Robert.
Alrighty. So how are you doing there, caller?
Right. I just wanted to let you know that music is coming over the air, but for some reason I just can't hear it in the studio.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Both those CDs were playing, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you very much, man. And so we'll continue to listen to the CD, even though I won't be able to hear it. At least you will. From a CD I picked up on the street from him. It's called Cal and Rosie at Tom Connors. Tom is a street magician who's moved on. I actually played his farewell salute to Santa Cruz, I think it was either last Sunday or maybe the week ago on the show. You tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio. I'm still having trouble with the studio amplifiers and monitors, probably some minor thing that I'm unaware of, and maybe Uncle Dennis will address when he gets in here. He has a show for 3 hours, From the Cream to the Dregs, coming up at 8 o'clock. Encourage you to listen to it. Lots of nice music from the 60s and 70s, Earth First Report, environmental specifics for those of you who want to do something and not just tap your feet. So check it out at 8 o'clock tonight. Let's hear some more from the street. I'm trying to catch up. And actually, before that, I'm going to read something because I occasionally run into things that I want to bring up. And also want to give you all a heads up of a couple things coming up. I believe the Guerrilla Theater is having a show tomorrow night. The Guerrilla Theater is DIY, or actually, well, they do it for you, really. It's a movie for the people. I can get this microphone to stop wilting on me. Come on there, boy, you can do it. Maybe. You can actually get these kinds of news updates at the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz website, www.indiebay.org. And what's coming up tomorrow in San Lorenzo Park is reportedly the movie The Third Man, which is an Orson Welles film. It'll be starting at 6 o'clock and going until 10. I guess they're going to be doing a number of things. The film isn't 4 hours long. And it's described thusly: join us for our last big hurrah of the summer, challenging the laws that make public space off limits to the public after sunset. We moved to San Lorenzo Park to show the only film ever shut down by the authorities in honor of Wes Modes' belated birthday. We show his candidate for the best film ever made. Great filmmaking in glorious black and white, a twisting plot, a haunting setting in post-war Vienna, a menacing Orson Welles, deep questions of loyalty, morality, greed, and fantastic zither music by Anton Karas. A grand late summer CGI celebration with a whole park filled with food, drink, blankets, people, parents, young ones, elders, punks, kids, working folks, and students, plus an intersection, suburban wasteland, and great company. Bring your friends, your family, and your neighbors. Bring lawn chairs, blankets, pillows, drink, and food to share for a late fall picnic. Donations are greatly appreciated and directly support the program. Santa Cruz Guerrilla Drive-In is an outdoor movie theater under the stars that springs up in the fields and industrial wastelands. Beyond showing great movies and bringing a broad community together, part of our mission is helping reclaim public space and transforming our urban environment into the joyful playground it should be. That's at the suburban wasteland location. It's going to be along the San Lorenzo River. The park is just over the pedestrian bridge from downtown. And you can find that on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Again, 6 to 10 tomorrow night, the night before Halloween. So right before they start charging you triple fines for drinking a beer in public, unless, of course, you're in public on one of the fancier, upscale, yuppie establishments that is allowed. You're allowed to do it because you're in the leased area of the, which they've stolen from the public off the sidewalks. You'll be able to, this will be the night before Halloween, you can go to the Guerrilla Drive-In and you don't have to pay anything, bring your own popcorn, and I'll probably be there, along with, I understand Vision Song Valerie is going to be showing up with a Huff video camera, who knows, maybe Beggar Backer Becky will be there too. She's also often videoing these events, so we'll see who shows up at this particular event, and we'll see if the police decide to leave the community alone in the park after dark, which is, of course, illegal in Santa Cruz. That's one announcement. Another announcement that I have on my list of announcements is a upcoming trial. Actually, there are two trials. One is a trial of John for a sitting ticket in the New Leaf area. Another is a trial of Robert Blind Bear Facer, who's a tall, older guy with feathers in his hat. He used to wheel around a three-wheeled bike tent before it was stolen from him, came down from the north in a canoe, I'm told, by his friend Rene of the streets. And he is going to trial for a sleeping ban ticket. Both of these cases will be hitting the courts on 1:30 Tuesday afternoon. Mark it on your calendar. Tuesday, November 3rd. That's 1:30 in Department 10. Department 10 is not in the courthouse building, but it is right next door in the county building, the five-story county building in Department 10 in the basement. That's referee Kim Baskett's court. And Ed Fry, local attorney, has volunteered to help with that case. He was quite successful in defending the sleeping van case of Sharon Pate. And charges were dismissed in that case. He's back again challenging the sleeping ban. As you heard, San Diego, much larger and much more conservative city, allows homeless people to sleep legally. Santa Cruz, of course, is refusing to do so in spite of its pseudo-liberal, well, it's liberal, the liberal illusion of Santa Cruz, the progressive myth. And hopefully enough of us will change that by standing up to support those who do what they have to do every night, which is sleep somewhere, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. Obama, as you may know, those of you who have listened to Democracy Now!, signed a record $680 billion war bill extending the military commissions. He signed it into law, the largest military spending bill of its kind. The bill includes funding for the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan and modifies the military commission system at Guantanamo, including new restrictions on hearsay and coerced testimony, although not barring that kind of testimony completely. It also increases prisoners' access to evidence and witnesses, but civil liberties advocates say it still falls far short of adhering to international law and the Geneva Conventions. Someone's accused of terrorism, you bring them to trial. You don't pretend that they're a foreign army organized from another country by another government when they're not. You don't lie about it and imprison and torture them for 8 years. Oh, wait, I guess you do, don't you? That's what the U.S. government has been doing, and that's what we've been supporting. And I heard a rant by Correll on 5:40 a.m. before I came over here about the Richmond rape that went down, where reportedly 10 people raped, at least 10 people, raped a young girl, a teenager, while others watched and took pictures over a period of 2 to 3 hours in Richmond. And his analysis of this whole thing, although he was boiling with fury to, you know, gang rape the people who did it and throw them in jail and punish them, was also to recognize that this takes place in a country which is essentially stood aside and taken pictures while people are getting systematically murdered abroad in foreign occupations over the last 8 years and held in concentration camp conditions without any charges or evidence shown to the public or put into the court system. According again to Obama's latest liberalizations, children could still be tried as war criminals and terror suspects. Of course, Obama needs to be tried as a war criminal, given his record for the last 9 months. Now known as unprivileged enemy belligerents, it's a new phrase, they could be tried for offenses not traditionally considered war crimes. Jamil Jafir of the American Civil Liberties Union said closing the Guantanamo Bay prison will have little meaning if the administration leaves in place the policies that the prison has come to represent. And Obama made some pious statement that he's trimming excessive military spending, babbling about the waste of billions of taxpayer dollars to keep this nation secure while he's spending more than he ever has. It's the ultimate in double talk. I think that wasting these dollars, President Obama continues, makes us less secure. I guess that's why he wants to waste some more, right? And that's why we passed, he says, a defense bill that eliminates some of the waste and inefficiency in our defense process, reforms that will better protect our nation, better protect our troops, and save taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. Despite Obama's praise, Democracy Now! Continues. The bill includes several military spending projects he'd opposed, including $560 million for a new F-35 joint strike fighter engine the Pentagon had rejected. Overall, the bill increases spending $24 billion from the last fiscal year. That's, you know, the bad Bush years. Now we're in the good Obama years, right? You've got to keep this clear. The bill also includes a law expanding definition of hate crimes to cover those targeted because of their sexual orientation, granting new protections to lesbian, gay, and transgender people under federal law. unless, of course, they happen to be Afghani, and called unprivileged enemy belligerents, right? Here's another article on the same subject. With less than 3 months left to make good on his promise to close the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay within 1 year, virtually no effort has been done to do so. President Barack Obama has signed the military funding bill, which will effectively restart military tribunals at that facility. Today's move finalizes a plan concocted by the president in May, which would make a handful of cosmetic changes to the tribunal system, giving detainees a little control over their legal counsel and barring certain types of hearsay evidence. Though some have praised the moves, many insist they don't go nearly far enough, and the tribunals continue to have features including the possibility of trying children, which violate international law. Despite the move, Obama insists he is serious about eventually closing the Guantanamo facility, though he no longer appears to be touting his January 22, 2010 deadline, and this is widely expected to have fallen by the wayside. Another story. More than 220 detainees remain at Guantanamo as the Obama administration decides how to prosecute some in U.S. courts and turn over others to nations that are willing to rehabilitate or free them. Additionally, the administration is grappling with how to keep in prison a small handful of remaining detainees who are considered too dangerous to release or put on trial or even tell what the charges are. Thank you very much. The new rules for military commissions replace a system for Guantanamo trials that was put in place during the Bush administration. The old system limited detainees' legal rights to defend themselves in trial, in part by allowing the use of hearsay and coerced statements to be used against them. Civil rights and constitutional law advocates say the changes that they call improvements still fall far short of guaranteeing detainees' rights. The new system was initially supposed to be approved by December, and detainees' cases have been put on hold for months, as they've been, of course, held for years. You know, we don't like being held for hours or even minutes illegally by a police officer. These people have been held and tortured for years, waiting for the rules to be put in place. Obama has ordered the prison to be closed, but the deadline, as mentioned before, is expected to be delayed. Here's a story on Afghanistan. The Washington Post is creating its own facts in order to support its argument for U.S. nation building in Afghanistan. In its lead editorial on Saturday, the Post asserted that the United States is capable of building a strong government in Afghanistan at the national and local levels. The Washington Post claimed that Afghanistan has had a working national government through most of the 1970s and 1980s. And now, according to this author, Melvin A. Goodman, the Washington Post misleads on Afghan history. That is not so. Afghanistan has always been a diverse, loosely organized country, though there was support for King Mohammad Zahir's reign from 1933 to 1973. King Zahir was the last Afghan ruler to pretend to play a national role, but he was a weak and indifferent ruler, spending most of his time abroad. He was ousted in a bloodless coup in 1973 by Prince Mohammad Daoud, who proclaimed himself the first president of the Republic of Afghanistan. There has not been a stable government in Afghanistan since. Daoud lasted until 1978, 5 years later, when the same leftist officers who had ousted the king occupied the palace and killed Daoud, his wife, and many of his children and grandchildren. Daoud was replaced by Nur Mohammad Taraki, secretary of the People's Democratic Communist Party, who was ousted and eventually executed by a supposedly loyal follower, Hafizullah Amin. In this period, marked by instability and violence, there was no evidence of national support for either Taraki or Amin. The conventional wisdom was that the Soviets were responsible for Daoud's coup against the king, as well as the events that led to the overthrow of Daoud. In fact, it was Iran and not the Soviet Union that was responsible, according to this author, as Tehran, with the encouragement of the United States, had been trying to draw Kabul into a Western-tilted, Tehran-centered security sphere. Remember, in the 70s, Iran was under the Shah, who was closely connected with the U.S. On Christmas Eve 1979, Soviet armed forces invaded Afghanistan, killed Amin, and replaced him with Babrak Karmal, a communist who is subservient to Moscow's wishes. This marked the fourth Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. This is new to me and interesting. in 54 years, following small-scale interventions in 1925, 1929, and 1930. It is not widely known, but President Jimmy Carter's National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski sponsored covert efforts in Central Asia to foment rebellion inside the Soviet Union even before Moscow ordered the invasion of Afghanistan. President Carter then authorized the CIA to assist Afghan rebels 6 months before Moscow invaded. Following the invasion, CIA Director William Casey encouraged Afghan rebels to conduct cross-border operations into the Soviet Union itself and boasted about these operations in secret talks with high-ranking members of Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, ISI. Not even the neocons who dominate the Washington Post editorial staff, and I remind you, this is about the Washington Post's claim that there's been a stable Afghanistan government in the past, could possibly believe that the 10-year Soviet occupation from 1979 to 1989 produced a, quote, working national government. Indeed, the Soviet occupation led to the creation of an anti-Soviet jihad that produced the greatest instability in Afghanistan's torturous history. The CIA worked closely with Pakistan's ISI during the jihad, including support for operations in the Soviet Republic of Tajikistan. No one in Washington worried about the political disintegration of Afghanistan during the 1980s or the potential repercussions for religious fanaticism throughout Southwest Asia in the 1990s. The Taliban created its own chaos from 1994 to 2001, and the U.S. invasion in 2001 led to another spiral of violence that continues until today. The recitation of this history over the past four decades is not only designed to expose the Washington Post's chicanery, or simply a lack of research, but to highlight the chaos and violence that marked Afghanistan. This history clearly suggests that nation-building and institution-building is a fool's errand in Afghanistan, where political and economic backwardness and corruption have been dominant. The Obama administration increased forces this summer to provide security for the Afghan election and to challenge the expanding Taliban presence in Helmand province. The effort failed on both counts and in the process left the northern regions of Afghanistan exposed to greater Taliban infiltration. The Taliban have also infiltrated key cities, including Kabul. It is possible that the repositioning of U.S. international forces could protect Kabul, Kandahar, Herat, and even Mazar-i-Sharif in the north, but key Afghan institutions, particularly the National Army and the police, cannot provide much support to U.S. forces in sensitive areas in the south and the east, where the Taliban has access to sanctuary in Pakistan. According to informed observers, the Afghan army is still unable to conduct autonomous operations with more than 100 troops. The high level of illiteracy among Afghan military recruits does not augur well for the future. The Obama administration is counting on the current Pakistani offensive against the Pakistan Taliban to buy time for the Islamabad, that's the Pakistani government. There is no indication that the Pakistan army would be willing or able to take on the Afghan Taliban and thus buy time for the government in Kabul. The notion of sending civilian specialists to Afghanistan to promote political and economic stabilization would be laughable if the situation were not so serious. Since there has never been an Afghan government capable of running the entire country, it is impossible to expect the U.S. military and civilian forces at virtually any reasonable level taking on both a successful counterinsurgency against the Taliban and the policy of nation building in Afghanistan. Plus, the U.S. people want the U.S. out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and the government is putting us more deeply in those places and spending $14 billion a month while the economy is crashing in the United States. There's also a great story about Craig Murray in Uzbekistan, which I was really moved by. It's long, though, and I would prefer to get back to street interviews. I encourage people to look at it. Maybe I'll just read a little bit of it. This is from, it's called How a Torture Protest Killed a Career. It's written by Craig Murray, who's a British diplomat from the Republic, formerly the Soviet Republic, now the independent dictatorship Republic of Uzbekistan, which is Uzbekistan. I think Uzbekistan is, I don't think it's adjacent to Afghanistan. I think it's adjacent to Iraq. But it's north of those countries. In this modern age, and especially since George W. Bush declared the war on terror 8 years ago, the price for truth-telling has been high. especially for individuals whose conscience has led them to protest the torture of alleged terrorists. One of the most remarkable cases is that of Craig Murray, a 20-year veteran of the British Foreign Service, whose career was destroyed after he was posted to Uzbekistan in August 2002 and began to complain about Western complicity in torture committed by the country's totalitarian regime, which was valued for its brutal interrogation methods and its vast supplies of natural gas. Murray soon faced misconduct charges that were leaked to London's tabloid press before he was replaced as ambassador in October 2004, marking the end of what had been a promising career. He later spoke publicly about how the Bush administration and Prime Minister Tony Blair's government collaborated with Uzbek dictator Islam Karimov and his torturers. And he made a statement to a parliamentary joint committee on torture on that. But he kept quiet about his personal ordeal as the victim of that smear campaign until October 22nd, about a week ago. At a small conference in Washington, he addressed the personal pain and his sense of betrayal. And here's a partial transcript of his remarks. I was just having dinner in a restaurant that was only a block from the White House. It must have been a good dinner because it cost me $120. Actually, it was a good dinner. I've never ever spoken in public about the pain of being a whistleblower, partly because of the British stiff upper lip thing, and partly as well because if you wish to try eventually to get on and reestablish yourself, it doesn't do to show weakness. I was sitting in this place on my own and feeling rather lonely. And there were a whole bunch of people in dark suits coming from government offices, in many cases in groups. And there they were with men's suits, sleek, and the ladies, the whole office, power politics thing going on, having after-dinner champagne on the posh bar. And I was remembering how many times I'd been the center of such groups and how successful my life used to be. I was a British ambassador at the age of 42. The average age for such a post is 57. I was successful in worldly terms, and I think I almost never sat alone in such a place. Normally, if I'd been alone in such a place, I would have ended up in the company of a beautiful young lady of some kind. I tell you that partly because this whole question of personal morality is a complicated one. I would never, ever, no one would ever have pointed to me as someone likely to become or to be a person of conscience. And yet, eventually, I found myself on the outside and treated in a way that challenged my whole view of the world. Let me start to tell you something about how that happened. I was a British ambassador to Uzbekistan, and I was told before I went that Uzbekistan was an important ally in the war on terror, had given the United States a very important air base, which was a forward mounting post for Afghanistan, and was a bulwark against Islamic extremism in Central Asia. When I got there, I found it was a dreadful regime, absolutely totalitarian, and there's a difference between dictatorship, of which there are many, and a totalitarian dictatorship, which, unless you've actually been in one, is hard to comprehend. There's absolutely no free media whatsoever. News on every channel. The news programs start with 12 items about what the president did today, and that's it. That is the news. There are no other news channels, and international news channels are blocked. There are about 12,000 political prisoners. Any sign of religious enthusiasm for any religion will get you put into jail. The majority of people are predominantly Muslim, but if you carry out the rituals of the Muslim religion, particularly if you were to pray five times a day, you'd be in jail very quickly, and Muslims traditionally do pray five times a day. Young men are put in jail for growing beards, and it's not just hippies. Over, of course, in Southwest Asia, many Islamic people grow beards, men, that is. It is not the only religion which is outlawed. The jails are actually full of Baptists. Being Baptist is illegal in Uzbekistan. I'm sure that Methodists and Quakers would be illegal too. It's just that they haven't got any, so they haven't got around to making them illegal. And it's really not a joke. If you're put in prison in Uzbekistan, the chances of coming out alive are less than even. And most of the prisons are the same old Soviet gulags in the most literal sense. They are physically the same places, the biggest one being the Jazlik Gulag in the deserts of Kizil Qum. I had only been there for a week or two when I went to a show trial of an Al-Qaeda terrorist they had caught. It was a big event put on partly for the benefit of the American embassy to demonstrate the strength of the U.S.-Uzbek alliance against terrorism. When I got there, to call the trial unconvincing would be an underestimate. There was one moment when this old man who had given evidence that his nephew was a member of Al-Qaeda and had personally met Osama bin Laden, and like everyone else in the court, he was absolutely terrified. But suddenly, as he was giving his evidence, He seemed from somewhere to find an inner strength. He was a very old man, but he stood taller and said in a stronger voice, he said, "This is not true. This is not true. They tortured my children in front of me until I signed this. I had never heard of Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden." He was then hustled out of court, and we never did find out what had happened to him. He was almost certainly killed. But as it happened, I was within touching distance of him when he said that, and I can't explain it. It's not entirely rational. But you could just feel it was true. You could tell he was speaking the truth when he said that. And that made me start to call into doubt the whole question of the narrative about Al-Qaeda in Uzbekistan and the alliance in the war on terror. Something which took that doubt over the top happened about a week later. The West, because Uzbekistan was our great ally in the war on terror, had shown no interest in the human rights situation at all. In fact, the opposite, going out of its way to support the dictatorship. So the fact that I seemed to be interested and seemed to be sympathetic came as something of a shock, and people in Uzbekistan started to come to me. One of the people who came to me was an old lady, a widow in her 60s, whose son had been killed in Jazlik prison, and she brought me photos of the corpse of her son. It had been given back to her in a sealed casket, and she had been ordered not to open the casket, but to bury it the next morning, which actually Muslims would do anyway. They always bury a body immediately. But she disobeyed the instructions not to open the casket. She was a very old lady, but very determined. She got the casket open and the body out onto the table and took detailed photos of the body before revealing the casket and burying it. These photos she now brought to me. I sent them on to the chief pathologist at the University of Glasgow, who actually now by coincidence is the chief pathologist for the United Kingdom. There were a number of photos, and he did a detailed report on the body. He said, from the photographs, the man's fingernails had been pulled out while he was still alive. Then he had been boiled alive. That was the cause of death, immersion in boiling liquid. Certainly, it wasn't the only occasion when we came across evidence of people being boiled alive. That was the most extreme form of torture, I suppose. But immersion in boiling liquid of a limb was quite common. Mutilation of the genitals was common. Suffocation was common, usually by putting a gas mask on people and blocking their air vents until they suffocated. Rape was common. Rape with objects, rape with bottles, anal rape, homosexual rape, heterosexual rape, mutilation of children in front of their parents. It began with that and became a kind of personal mission for me. Now I'm going to pause for a moment here. I'm reading a story of Charles Murray, former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, who was, once he started drawing attention to these human rights abuses, fired by the British government, discredited, and he's still fighting away, and he's got a long story. And on the website, you can Google for Charles Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y, Uzbekistan. He apparently went public with this whole thing in a specific kind of account on October 22nd, and it's called How a Torture Killed a Career. But these truly gruesome details are an interesting contrast to what happened in Richmond and with the youths accused of raping, the rape that happened of the young girl and the many people who watched it, and the incredible outrage generated by people for that, compared with the complete indifference to the fact that this kind of even more horrendous behavior with the aid and comfort of the U.S. has been going on for the last decade, if not longer. I'm sure it has for longer, but it's intensified under the Bush administration and not stopped under the Obama administration. It's like you have a local scapegoat to rant and rave and pound your shoe on the table about, but when it comes to what your government is doing routinely, which is worse, and which your money is paying for, you don't want to say anything. You don't quite know how to deal with it, and I can appreciate that too. A couple more lines from this. I wasn't going to do this, but I guess I want to read a little more of this before I get back to a few street interviews before ending the show, which ends in about 15 minutes. It began with that and became a kind of personal mission for me, that evidence of the woman's son or husband being boiled alive. I suppose to do what I could to stop this, I spent a lot of great deal of time with my staff gathering evidence on it. Being a very capricious government, occasionally a victim of the Uzbek regime would be released, and we'd be able to see them and get medical evidence. More often, you'd get letters smuggled out of the gulags and detention centers, evidence from relatives who managed to visit prisoners. We built up an overwhelming dossier of evidence, and I complained to London about the conduct of our ally in rather strong terms, that is to say, of the United States, including the photos of the boy being boiled alive. I received a reply from the British Foreign Office. It said this, and this is a direct quote, "Dear Ambassador, we are concerned that you are perhaps over-focused on human rights to the detriment of commercial interests." I was taken aback. I found that extraordinary. But things had gotten much worse, because while we were gathering information about torture, we were also learning what people were forced to confess to under torture. People aren't tortured for no reason. They're tortured in order to extract some information or to get them to admit to things. And normally the reason you torture people is to get them to admit to things that aren't actually true. They were having to confess to membership in Al-Qaeda, to being at training camps in Afghanistan, personally meeting Osama bin Laden. At the same time, we were receiving CIA intelligence. MI6 and CIA share all their intelligence. So I was getting all the CIA intelligence on Uzbekistan. It was saying that the detainees had confessed to membership in Al-Qaeda and being in training camps in Afghanistan and to meeting Osama bin Laden. One way and another, I was piecing together the fact that the CIA material came from the Uzbek torture sessions. I didn't want to make a fool of myself, so I sent my deputy, a lady named Karen Morin, to see the CIA head of station and say to him, "My ambassador is worried your intelligence might be coming from torture. Is there anything he's missing?" She reported back to me that the CIA head of station said, "Yes, it's probably coming from torture, but we don't see that that is a problem in the context of the war on terror." In addition to which, I learned that the CIA were actually flying people to Uzbekistan in order to be tortured. I should be quite clear that I knew for certain and reported back to London that people were being handed over by the CIA to the Uzbek intelligence services and were being subject to the most horrible tortures. I didn't realize they weren't Uzbek. I presume they were Uzbek people who had been captured elsewhere and being sent in. I now know from things I've learned subsequently, including the facts from the Council of Europe parliamentary inquiry into an extraordinary rendition, when it found that 90% of all the flights that called at the secret prison in Poland, run by the CIA as a torture center for extraordinary rendition, 90% of those flights next went straight on to Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan. There was an overwhelming body of evidence that actually people from all over the world were being sent, taken by the CIA to Uzbekistan, specifically in order to be tortured. I didn't know that. I thought it was only Uzbeks, but nonetheless, I was complaining internally as hard as I could. And the rest of the story by Charles Murray, the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, is about how he was smeared, falsely accused, discredited, and fired from his job, actually forced to resign, and how the retaliation, how he fought back, and how he's continuing to fight back. And it's quite a story. Go online, Google for Charles Murray, if you want to read more of this story. So, in case you have any comments, you can call in. If you've been tortured lately, let me know. I got a call from a woman today who may come into the studio, said she was tortured in Santa Cruz by police and deputies, and she was then put into this chair in the jail, which is a kind of a... It's a torture device that masquerades as a restraining device. Which people are put into, it's kind of like it masks you and holds you in place, and it's called the chair. I don't know if it's ever been investigated by Lynn Robinson's Public Safety Committee. Lynn Robinson is our city council member who now heads the Public Safety Committee. She was piously telling a crowd of people at the city council meeting two nights ago that's one of the things she does. She's the head of the Public Safety Committee, and, well, it's true, they didn't hold an evening meeting, which many people were denouncing them for. The city council is supposed to hold, was regularly holding evening meetings, which are much more accessible than afternoon sessions. But she said, oh, it was too late for us to do anything. But since, of course, the stabbing of this youth downtown was on October 17th, and the council meeting was on October 27th, that gave them 10 days to hold a meeting. And when I brought to their attention the fact they could hold an emergency meeting or a fast meeting if they wanted, they could have actually scheduled one, I got a lot of defensive comments and ridicule and personal attacks from council's members Lane and Rotkin, and an attempted attack, I think, from Ryan Coonerty, but Rotkin beat him to the punch. It's a disadvantage to being behind on these street interviews. I'm 10 days behind. I apologize for that, so it kind of keeps me, it's a sort of a lag here. It also, though, gives you a certain perspective, so you can see some aspects of things you didn't see or you might not have seen. And let's see if I have anything. This great story on about Murray's account is really moving, and I encourage people to take a listen. There's new abuses that are being voted by the Patriot Act, which is being renewed in spite of promises that's not going to happen. There's an interesting article by Alexander Coburn, All the Populism Money Can Buy, on the Counterpunch website about the corporate class in America being out of control and how Obama is essentially feeding the greed. There's an interesting article about the city commissioner hoping to ease Portland's camping ban. I think I'm going to read that, actually, before I go. I guess these street interviews may have to wait until Sunday, although I'm going to be hard-pressed to play them all. I may have to do an extra show again. I did an extra show last week in order to play them. And people have said to me, why don't you tell us when the show is so we can hear the damn thing? And I will try to do that if I do an extra show next week. Here's the story from Portland, which seems to be here. Let's see if I got it. Yeah, city commissioner hopes to ease Portland's camping ban. This is one of the city commissioners, or I guess the equivalent in Portland of the Santa Cruz's city council. Michael Callahan greets a passerby as he sits outside Portland City Hall with his insulated sleeping box he's dubbed the White Knight. The homeless O'Callahan is protesting the city's no camping ordinance. By defining a campsite as any bedding or sleeping material, in effect, it says you can't sleep, he says. And, of course, that's also true in Santa Cruz, where sleeping after 11 o'clock for anyone outside or out in a building that is not a domicile, on private property even, is illegal. It's a violation of the camping ordinance to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz. But, again, going back to Portland. When it comes to housing homeless people, Mike O'Callahan has a $98 idea. He built a plywood box in less than 4 hours that's warm, safe, and dry when you crawl inside. For more than a week, he's parked his White Knight on the curb in front of City Hall in a silent protest of police rousting people at night to enforce Portland's anti-camping ordinance. Now, in Santa Cruz, Wanton Dave Jacobs, Red Top Robert Florian, Skidmark Bob Duran did this in the spring of 1994 as a protest. They called it the World Peace Vigil against the camping ordinance in Santa Cruz and the way homeless people were treated. And Ryan Coonerty's father, Neil Coonerty, Mike Rotkin, and Cynthia Matthews promptly put together new laws that made that act of protest itself illegal. It is illegal to have a so-called obstruction on the sidewalk after dark, which is what this little protest box was in Santa Cruz and is in Portland. So what is being done in Portland is illegal in Santa Cruz now. O'Callahan is homeless by choice. He said he would rather not spend his meager Social Security check on housing. He knows his wooden box will never get any traction with city leaders. What he's trying to say is that the rain is here and people are getting wet. Something needs to be done now. There's a problem. Here's a solution, he said. One thing that may get traction is Commissioner Nick Fish's desire to temporarily ease the city's camping ban. It is my belief that we need to relax some of the rules for people who have no alternative but to sleep outside, said Fish, who oversees the city's housing programs. So maybe he's actually not a city council type person. Maybe he's more of an appointed executive type. Portland is halfway through a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness by increasing rent assistance and first-time buyer programs and building affordable housing, among other things. This, of course, is largely smoke and mirrors, consultants, studies, and essentially fund grabs by certain poverty pimp organizations and attempt to cover this stuff. Though there is some housing for intractables being built or being made available, but not much. I also have to say that in Santa Cruz, there was a similar attempt to end the or to alleviate the camping ban over the winter in 1998, when there was a new city council. Council members Sugar and Crone attempted to do this in their one attempt to take some action, but that attempt was voted down by Catherine Byers, Fitzmaurice, and Matthews and Rotkin. Portland is, hundreds of people are still sleeping outside in Portland. In 2007, 2 years after the 10-year plan to end homelessness began, the city recorded a 40% decrease in people sleeping outside. Now those numbers are creeping back up because of the economy. The galling rub for O'Callaghan and many others is that the city's anti-camping ordinance prohibits people from putting up a tent, as it does in Santa Cruz, or even covering themselves up with a tarp. Police often move people several times a night, and homeless advocates say the lack of a decent night's sleep makes it harder for people to stay healthy and focus on getting jobs and permanent shelter. I think so. About a dozen homeless people camped outside City Hall last week, some weeks ago, to protest the camping ban. I contacted Street Roots, the local homeless newspaper there, a pretty good newspaper, one of the best in the country, and I was told that that protest has now been reduced to one person, but I guess that could be Mike Callahan still in his little white knight wooden structure outside City Hall. Homeless advocates sued the city over the law last year, and a federal judge has directed settlement talks. Fish wants to suspend the camping ban for the winter months, but said a precise plan will come from the settlement negotiations. So perhaps if anybody's interested, you can call council members Byers and Lane and tell them at 420-5020, 420-5020, to immediately call for a suspension of the camping ban over the winter, given the fact that there's just simply no shelter. Tonight, there is zero walk-in shelter at the homeless service center, unless that situation has miraculously changed. That was the case throughout the summer. That is still the case now. When the armory opens, there'll be 100 beds if people cram in. 75 is supposed to be the maximum. But since there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people, it's not going to make a hell of a lot of difference for most of the people outside, who are being criminalized for trying to shelter themselves. He will also propose, Fish will, in Portland, an ordinance allowing churches to let up to 3 campers or tents on their properties. We don't have that ordinance. We have an ordinance that says if you have a vehicle, you can park 3 vehicles on church property with the permission of the church. Very few churches allow that. We agree there is a crisis, Fish said. I understand why for any single person experiencing homelessness, the city is not doing enough. I have a 10-year plan, not a 10-second plan. So all you have to do is wait 10 years, and then you might have a place to sleep. That's a great idea. Eugene has had a similar church camping law for 10 years. Seattle allows one tent city on church property for up to 100 adults, but it must relocate every 3 months. Fish isn't suggesting the creation of another Dignity Village, Portland's 8-year-old permanent homeless camp at 9401 Northeast Sunderland Avenue. The camp has 55 residents living in 42 makeshift homes. He said the relaxation of the no camping law would allow people to shelter themselves at night with a tent or tarp as long as they move along during the day. Well, this is the status quo in Los Angeles and in San Diego. And in Fresno, actually, you can allow you keep tents up during the day. Lawsuits are active in Sacramento, Santa Monica, and Santa Barbara, demanding that their anti-camping laws be overturned. Santa Cruz sits on its ass and allows police to regularly harass people outside who have no legal place to go. We're glad these changes are being considered. It would make an immediate difference to people living outside, said Monica Garaki, the Oregon Law Center lawyer who challenged the anti-camping law on behalf of the homeless people. I think we're all working toward the same goal. Portland's housing advocates have pushed to allow more camping for years, but now they say the troubled economy has put many people on the street for the first time, and so forth and so on. And there's more to this story. If you're interested, go to Street Roots, and you can get more information about that. I have about 2 minutes left, and so I want to thank everybody who was listening and thank the two callers who called for calling in. I want to remind you that on Sunday I will be having special guests in the studio, Street Savvy Steve, who will be doing a critical analysis of everything in Santa Cruz and a lot of things that aren't, and also an activist who's concerned with the Board of Permit Appeal shenanigans going on at the Board of Supervisors level. And that is Dan Bronson. That'll be at 8:30 on Sunday morning with the permission of Thomas Levitt, who I still haven't heard from. Thomas, call home. I'm going to put on a little music to give Dennis at least 45 seconds to set up his show and bring in his pale ale, which I'm not going to reveal the name of yet because that might be a... Who knows? It could be a secret. Is it a secret, Dennis?
No.
It's not a secret. Well, all I can say is, great Scott! That's all I can say, and so I will say no more. I'll be coming back on Sunday, and also I'll be at the Guerrilla Theater tomorrow down in San Lorenzo Park, where, who knows, maybe the police will actually allow people to use the public spaces for which they were intended. Parks have been closed since 1984 at night. Thank you, Jim Lang. And hopefully we'll be able to watch The Third Man together. Join me down there if you'd like. And who knows, on Halloween we might be wandering around the streets with video cameras, keeping an eye on the police, keeping an eye on you. Never can tell. Give me a call at 423-HUFF between times, and I'll get back to you on Sunday mornings at 8:30. See you then.
Deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh yeah.
If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play and never see you when deliberately you put things in my way, well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile because all the while I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles.
For miles and miles and miles and
miles and miles. Oh yeah. You took advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh yeah.
Deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and
Eiffel Tower in the Toy Hall might see on clear days. You thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, there's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and 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 miles. I can see for miles.
Well, hopefully you can see for miles and miles. I, unfortunately, can only see Robert. So, I know for some of you who can't see Robert on the radio, that's probably no big deal. But for those of us who can see him in the studio, I'm looking right at you. Okay. Anyway, you know, probably the thing I like most about you, Robert, is seeing your back headed out the door.
I'm on the knees. That's what you're
right. Anyway, I am Uncle Dennis, and despite all my mirthful ribbing of Robert, he is a fine programmer, and you can hear him again on Sunday at 9:30 or earlier, depending on whether Thomas accedes to the torturous pleas of Robert for even more time on the air. And Robert mentioned that he wanted to do some more tapes, I believe Wednesday at 10 a.m. is open, 10 to noon.
Unfortunately, that's the Huff meeting time.
Well, you can hold the Huff meeting here as long as it doesn't have more than four people.
That's what I needed. We could have a publicized Huff meeting, but then that would ruin the purpose of the broadcast, which is to play old tapes.
Oh, well. You could bore them with old tapes. Anyway, welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. I am Uncle Dennis, as I mentioned before, and we play music from the 60s and 70s up until 11 o'clock. In a little while, I will reveal the full identity of tonight's Brew of the Week. And, of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update. At 10 o'clock, the Spotlight Group of the Week. So stay tuned for Rock and Roll.
would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose.